Welcome to The Art of the Impossible, a podcast that explores how the design and manufacturing industry can leverage technology, processes, and people to make the impossible possible. I'm Asif Mogul, Director of Market and Industry Development at Autodesk, and each week I'll be joined by industry experts to share the challenges they face and what they're doing to overcome them. From smart products, mass customization, digitization, supply chain, and the convergence of once diverse industries, this podcast is for business leaders who are interested in making things happen. You can subscribe by following us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to this episode of The Art of the Impossible. Now, this might sound like a strange topic to talk about. We're going to talk about 3D. Now, you might think it's strange because the concept of 3D modeling has been around for a long time. Actually, it was first originated in the 1960s. And I think it's fair to say that it totally has transformed the industry. Now, primarily because of its impact on speed and accuracy, the jobs that we have to do, but also how it's helped non-engineering people understand, if you like, the design intent of a product or a concept. So given that it's been around a long time, 3D is actually older than me, we might think that everybody in the world has it and is using the approach. But, you know, there's actually still a lot of people that are on the transition from the world of 2D drafting to 3D modeling. And so we thought this episode would be a really great opportunity to kind of like dig into that. So if you're one of those people that's still heavily using two-dimensional techniques, why should you consider 3D? Why should it be part of your transformation strategy? And is it really that easy? How easy or hard is it to make that transition? And what are the real benefits aside from the sort of things that I described? So let's hear from a real customer that's going through and has gone through the transition. And I'd like to welcome Ted Page, who's the head of digital design at Nyhaus Saar Industries UK and Ireland. So Ted, warm welcome to this episode.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Okay, so let's kick off then. So Ted, could you just tell us a little bit more about Nyhaus, your role, what you do, the company, markets you serve, those kind of things?
Yeah, I'll give it a good stab because we've had a bit of a recent kind of shake-up. So I'll start when I joined the company 6 years ago, pretty much almost to the day. I think back then the company was originally called H2OK, a kind of small developer services, septic tank inspection, small drainage projects company based in the southwest of England, in Truro. Mid-2000s got taken over by Nyhaus, who are a Dutch wastewater treatment company. So then became kind of Nyhaus H2OK, increased the project portfolio massively from, you know, just being the southwest, being kind of UK, and then helping out with the Dutch projects that were kind of global. And the most recent acquisition, which is by the Saar Group from France, so now for Nyhaus Saar Industries, which again has now increased the entire kind of global Nyhaus project range, manufacturing range to, from kind of the Dutch area and the UK to kind of massively global. With the might of the French Saar Group behind us, it's gone massive. So along with that, the transformation in company size, different type of projects, different customers, clients, different acquisitions coming into the company. That all encompasses, again, like I've mentioned, different style projects, bigger projects, clients that are well-versed in different processes or different deliverables, internal different softwares, systems, how does everything work together? So where I've come from in 6 years of basically being sat in a nice little office in the southwest of England, starting off just doing only 2D drawings to now we're doing, you know, as a smallish company, a smallish outfit of digital design as such, we're embracing AR, VR, drone surveys, in-house 3D scanning, scan to BIM, you name the list, we've probably tried our hand at all of it. So that's a very brief outline of kind of the company where it's been and gone and going in my kind of short 6 years. Again, mentioned we're predominantly wastewater treatment, which trying to get the wastewater treatment industry into the digital world can be quite tricky. So not only have we got the kind of obstacles of everything else, it's also getting the client and the industry to accept and embrace that what we're doing is actually a legitimate way of doing things and not just, oh, actually, we've always done it this way, so can we just carry on doing it?
Yeah. And you said something really, really interesting there, actually, was 3D. I guess sometimes people might just consider 3D as like three-dimensional modeling, but you talked about AR, VR. It's this whole concept of bringing engineering products to life in a true three-dimensional sense. So I'd love to dig into that in a bit more in a bit. So thank you for that intro. It sounds like a huge compressed amount of change that like that you've gone through, the company's gone through. If you kind of like look at the industry and how the industry itself has changed in the sort of 6 years you've been with the business, what are the key changes that you've seen happen, you know, to the whole kind of wastewater industry?
I think in Britain, we know, being bill payers of municipal water companies, it's always in the news. It's bad news. It's bad news. It's bad news. From the industry that I'm in, there is change trying to happen. There's people trying to bring out new technologies to combat all the bad press that's out there. But obviously, that needs money, time, infrastructure. You can't just swap out and replace. But we are finding that the industry is adapting more. You know, people jumped on the what you'd call the BIM bandwagon, because again, when people mention 3D,
yeah,
the uninitiated just immediately think, oh, a 3D pretty picture, that's BIM. No, that was yeah, when maybe 5-10 years ago, and the water industry is just jumping on it now, kind of thing, going, oh, actually, oh, that's a good, yeah, we need a 3D model of this. But I don't think they understand the full concept of why you need a 3D model, how it can assist the asset management and the facilities management of a wastewater treatment site, of which trying to get hold of any current asset information is predominantly stuck on an old negative 2D printout from the late 60s stuffed in a drawer on site somewhere. So I think on top of the bad press that we see about, you know, sewage, et cetera, I think in the digital world and the asset management kind of thing, there needs to be huge investment in that industry to get on top of you know, hundreds of thousands of assets that are kind of crying out to be kind of 3D mapped or managed in a 3D environment.
Okay. Now, you talked about some of the, it sounds like, quite dramatic changes the business has gone through. So you went from a small company to being acquired to trying to implement technologies, and it just seems like there's additional bits of the company being bolted together, so it's becoming this like much larger beast than it ever used to be. You touched upon different systems that you have, you know, company A having one system, company B having a different system. What's been the, you know, from your point of view, what's been the impact of these changes on the business? It's kind of like rapid growth or rapid joining together of different parts of the business. What was the kind of real world impact of those changes?
You could probably bring in an element of everything that you immediately think a nightmare, completely opposite end of the scale. It's kind of a navigation through each month of a year, maybe could be a completely different mindset of, oh, this is great now because we've got this, this, and this. And then the following month, oh no, it's completely negative because this doesn't work together. And it's trying to bring the two ends of the spectrum to some kind of equilibrium, which you can see is the end game, but it's very difficult when, yeah, one arm of the company has never used kind of 3D as such. Another arm of the company is only kind of in their channel of, we only use Inventor or we only use SolidWorks and we will not kind of embrace any other change. This is how we've done it for so many years and we will only do this. So it's trying to get the education out there of, I'll start at the beginning of this podcast and say, I'm no expert. I'm no guru in all this. I'm just yet another person who's trying to navigate their way through and make something work out of, as we know, a plethora of products, workflows, etc. But it's trying to bring all these different parties that may not be educated, may not be aware, may be reluctant, to try and bring them all into one place and at least form some common ground throughout all the changes that we've had. You know, the biggest change is, I suppose, and I don't want to blow my own trumpet, I've brought in a lot of change by not expertise, but I think it is looking at what is out there. And again, I suppose my main source is probably LinkedIn, because I don't really do any other social media or anything like that. LinkedIn's a good one just for seeing things crop up. Someone's done something with a scanner. Someone's done something with another bit of kit. Oh, that's interesting. Let's investigate that. Will that benefit not only our business, is the client base and the industries that we're working, will potential clients go for that? So a lot of things out there you look at, and immediately the hardened old school engineer who's used to being, you know, just doing 2D sections plans for 50 years on a drawing board, oh, that's a gimmick. We don't need that. That's just a gimmicky 3D thing. But there's lots of ways to acquire data. It's what you do with that data afterwards. Anyone can produce a 3D model. Anyone could go and acquire a point cloud. But what you need to think about is that data. What am I going to do with it? It's going to, you know, be cost effective, be economical, benefit all parties involved. You may acquire some data like that, but the client's never going to see any of it as a deliverable. But it might aid your design process. So it's not just a case of we've got this data, great. Okay. You know, so could another 10 companies, but what sets you apart? So I think I probably digressed from the original question. But
well, no, I don't think so actually. Because what I'm picking up what you're saying is okay. I think where we started talking about was like what was the impact of all these dramatic rapid changes to the business, and what I picked up you saying was there's a lot of, well, you used the word equilibrium, and I guess that the impact of those changes was it really disturbed that equilibrium into some sort of like I don't want to say chaos, but sort of like uncertainty, people jumping into their silos and sort of always like digging their heels in and say, oh, we've always done it this way. This is how my part of the business has worked and it has worked successfully. I don't see why I should change. Whereas it sounds like what you were trying to do was take a more holistic look at it and say, well, okay, I know your part of the business used to do this, but then take a look at that in context of everything we need to do. Is that really now the right way to do it, or should we consider change? So I think your role sounds like you're really implementing this change management process across the whole organization, almost like continually, and you're sort of, you know, coming up against, you know, in sort of multiple challenges. So I think that, well, one really interesting thing to ask would be, well, you could have started anywhere. You could have started your transformation journey anywhere in the company. You chose to start it around, you know, sort of the concept of 3D. Now, again, just to be clear, no, we're not talking about 3D CAD specifically. We're talking about just 3D as a concept. What was the problem that you felt 3D was the answer to?
The main thing is just having that volumetric awareness of the size of what you're looking at, or what you're drawing or drafting, or what you're trying to fit into a space. You know, I started out in 99 as a trainee technician, just in time for drawing boards, just to be coming to their end. So I was lucky enough to get my, at age 16, get my set of rotring pens, my scale rule, yes, some French curves, etc.
And then within, I still have mine.
Absolutely. Never leave them. So it was, yeah, 2D, 2D, 2D. And you're essentially just looking at lines, and you don't get an appreciation for what you could be having in front of you. You could have a huge treatment works that's the size of a small town. You could have a small concrete slab. But for the uninitiated eye, you're looking at it, it's like, well, immediately you don't get an appreciation for the size of it. If you've got that 3D element and you can see height, width, depth, immediately you're going, wow, this is a big structure. I've actually got to think more about health and safety concerns at design, or things that you might not just pick up in 2D. And that's one of the main benefits in my eyes. Secondary to that is obviously efficiency and speed. Back to the drawing board thing, you make a mistake, that's a big change to get that redrafted out again. These days, whether it's 3D CAD, whether whatever it is that you're modeling, you could bring a day's change on a drawing board or 2D down to kind of a fraction of that time.
You said something there about like it increases the, I think you said, volumetric awareness.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a term or one that I've just kind of made up.
No, well, let's coin it. Let's trademark it under your name, okay? So volumetric awareness. What was the impact of not having that volumetric awareness? I conceptually get that, like, a, you know, if you're more fully aware of what you're working on, you can perhaps apply your skills as an engineer or whatever your role is to that project more effectively. But what were the problems that you were seeing that were cropping up due to a lack of this volumetric awareness? Was it errors? Was it just time delays? What things did you see happening?
Definitely. The main one, you've hit the nail on the head, is errors, not just in design, but in all elements of a project, in the project delivery, from health and safety, procurement, site access, etc. So again, going back to something as simple as a previous job that I had, which again, I implemented a 3D change on. this was, what, 2015, 16, working for a telecoms company. So all their kind of design was 2D plan, 2D elevation, a new or existing kind of mobile phone antenna mast, you know, whoever's operating it, swapping out some antennas for the new latest 4G ones. Very simple, squares, circles, you know, rotate orthogonally, perfect. But the guys that were kind of very inexperienced running in the CAD department, just getting very simple things wrong. And when it comes to doing the detailed design package for a swap out of some steelwork on a, you know, 30 meter tall mast, because it was all 2D and very kind of blasé and just elevation and plan, they didn't get an appreciation for how someone's actually going to install that kit, because it's just it's a 2D plan. I've not really taken account for what size that pole is or how many U-bolts I'll need for this. And actually, what is a U-bolt? I'm just stating something on text, but I've not actually seen what this piece of kit is and how does it all fit together. So I implemented basically the detailed design package becoming more from another previous job that I had, which was more manufacturing, which was actually producing a kind of bill of materials, a 3D isometric of every part taken away and showing how it's all built up. Actually getting it in that 3D environment, you can actually orbit around it. And then as soon as you drop in like a life-size person, the other engineers or CAD guys are going, oh, wow, I didn't know that went there and that was that big. And it's every physical aspect. Looking at that, the 2D element was almost like your fag packet sketch. It doesn't really give anyone information, but you can see what it is, but it doesn't explain anything that would aid or assist the installers, the procurers, the health and safety management of that project, because it's just lines that aren't really giving anything away. It's almost, well, it is. It's non-intelligent data.
The word that's popping into my mind as I'm hearing you speak there, Ted, is the word context. It feels like operating, because we see the world in 3D. I'm looking out my window now and I can see everything going on in the street. Everything is a three-dimensional physical form. So I think we're naturally programmed to think in 3D. So if I was just to look at the world and it was a flat picture, I would lose context. And I think that's the word that was popping up into my mind, is that what I think I'm hearing you say is that working in true three dimensions gives everybody in the business the context they need to do their job as best as they possibly can. And that's probably one of the reasons why some of the errors in the, you know, that some of those sort of stuff goes away. So that was a word that was popping into my mind, context, as I was hearing you speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, that was just an example of where I implemented a bit of 3D just to in another company. And obviously now at Nighthouse, it was a bit of a battle. But now it's just having that ability to, yeah, we'll probably touch on this a bit later on, but one prime example, get the client on board with a bit of a design review. In a first-person walk-around of a model, client says, you can't get an operator under that gantry to access that valve. Actually, I'll set the operator at, I'll say 2.4 metres is really, really tall. Physically walking, no clashes, great. Try and do that in a 2D environment. You'd have to do a markup, send it off, try and prove it. Whereas within a five-second walk-around, it's all visible and you're kind of ticking things off.
And then just think about the cost of getting that wrong. First of all, there was the potential delay. Okay, let's go off and prove to you, and it might take like 2 days to prove it. Or, we're right, and it might turn out to be wrong. Where, you know, that client might have, you know, an army of giants working for them, which are 2.5 meters tall. That wouldn't be good, right? So that there would be a cost associated with that. So yeah, so I think that's where the speed and accuracy and the kind of reduction of errors sort of comes in. Now, you mentioned the word battle. And that's what I want to touch on next. Now, I think in any industry, it's always difficult to implement change. And from what I picked up on you, from what you were saying, is like the water treatment industry is, you know, typically quite conservative. But hopefully that's not an incorrect way to say it. How did you go about introducing a change like this into the organization? And what pushback did you, because you must have had some pushbacks, but just talk us through that. How did you start, and what were the challenges you faced on like, hey, I'm gonna introduce this great thing called 3D?
We'll use the Nighthouse as it's fresh. When I joined, and it was predominantly 2D in the UK, our Dutch counterparts at HQ for manufacturing were obviously using, I think they got Inventor, And then using Revit just to produce kind of simple layouts. So they're the manufacturing arm. So they've been quite kind of well-versed in the 3D world, but they're not heavily into projects as we are in the UK. We're doing kind of heavy engineering projects, you know, cradle to grave, DBMFOs, EPC contracts, etc. So we're from project delivery through to handover to as-built operations, maintenance, job lot. So the projects we were kind of doing at the time were for local water authorities. You didn't really need that 3D element as such, because it was more a case of the drawing was just there to say you've done a deliverable. You know, the guys on the ground, it's dig a trench, put a new pipe in. It's, you know, bread and butter kind of stuff. The drawing, okay. They rarely went from drawings as such. They kind of knew what they were doing. We just had to kind of join up the dots. So it was only really, I think, maybe within my first year that I started to implement change. You know, speak to the guys out in HQ, you know, what is it you're doing with Revit and Inventor and this and that? So we kind of formed a bit of a global collaboration, show and tell. Here's my ideas, things that I've done in the past, things that I know that are on the market, things that we've not tried as a company. So kind of wanted to get that global collaboration going. But the fact that the UK and the manufacturing arm are kind of so different in terms of what we actually need. Yes, we're both working 3D, but the kind of use of that 3D or the need or the different software solutions are so different. I kind of went off on my own path, obviously keeping the collaboration going and keeping informed. But it's like, right, let's now, I think we had one project, which is a great project I would love to redo now with the tools we've got. But back then it was a water treatment plant for a holiday park down in Cornwall. It's kind of our flagship, kind of one that I do all my current testing and future testing of any hardware, software on. I want to say, you know, something footprint 30 meters by 20 meters, fair few tanks on there, other bits of kit, heavy kit, completely piled, reinforced slab, massive operation. We kind of did up until, I want to say, probably 75% of the design in 2D. So everything in 2D CAD, very little 3D influence. Only 3D element really was civil 3D for kind of topo surfaces, DTMs, maybe a bit of grading and kind of access track design. The rest of it was all manual 2D drafting, bar schedules, whole job lot of disciplines. And it was only kind of coming towards the end of the submitting the construction drawings that higher management kindly not caved in, but listened. And we went, look, Revit, this project would have been a breeze if we'd have used that. And they kind of give the okay to go, right, well, if you can produce a model of what we've already done in 2D between now and the time that it's actually built, there's your task. So furiously, two of us working on it, and we produced what you call the kind of construction model based on our construction drawings in 2D. Kind of used that as a bit of a show and tell piece. And that was the catalyst, really, for them moving on. So that was the catalyst for kind of starting now going down the path of assessing the project. Do we need AutoCAD? Do we need Revit? Obviously other products on the market, but that's where we're at with our software. Other catalysts from that project, yet again, myself doing a bit of detective work, looking at how many site visits we had at the beginning of the project. We had things like covenant levels. We couldn't be above this tree line that was, I don't know, 8 meters high. Two parts of the site, which were maybe half a mile in distance. Guys going up tape measures, coming back with some fag packet sketches, this and that. Well, did you get that measurement? Oh, no, I didn't. I best go back. Okay, it's fairly local, but it's still visit after visit after visit after visit. Techniques of kind of a guy in a field with his staff at 5 meters, someone 200 meters away going, I can just see the top of that stuff. It's like, right, this is, you know, we're not in the 1970s anymore. It's kind of, let's move on. So hold my hand up. Another case on this project. Can we just hire out a 3D scanner, a TLS scanner, and maybe see what we can capture as built with this project? So the results came back in basically 6 hours on site. We captured all the things that we had revisits for. So I got the tree heights. We've got pretty much, I want to say, about 35 site visits worth of data in 6 hours, you know, in one visit. So that was the catalyst then for, we're going to do this from now on. It's not a luxury or a kind of gimmicky bonus or whatever. It actually provides good data. And the cost saving was obvious. I did a few calculations and went, yeah, you know, X, Y, and Z cost this much, but actually for one day on site, including hire of equipment, was this. And it's just like night and day. So that was a catalyst for us in the UK and me kind of becoming where I am now, really. I never wanted to be the head of anything.
But here you are.
I really thought about digital design or, you know, in the late 90s when I left school and a mate of mine said, oh, I've got an apprenticeship at Scott Wilson. Oh, well, how much is that? Oh, it's 5K a year. That's more than me paper around. I'll do that.
It sounds like that was the sort of like the tipping point from this kind of technology being pretty pictures kind of stuff to actually this technology could be quite useful to us as a business. And so did you experience any kind of like really pushback or roadblocks along the way? Because, you know, some of our other guests have told us that sometimes it's a lack of a business case justification. A lot of our guests tell us that it's usually the people that are a bit resistant. Where were you on that? What were your experiences of like challenges or pushbacks you had even after the kind of like the business case was made?
I think a bit of all of it, really. Again, the word 3D, when was this tipping point? Maybe early 2018. So that was still someone in the office coming upstairs, someone from kind of higher management. Oh, Ted, can you do a BIM for us? Pardon? No, a BIM of this project. Right, I'll sit you down again. I'll do you another workshop. This is what BIM is. This is what this is. BIM is not Revit. Da, 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 da. Right. So through a lot of internal workshops, I've now got to the point from 2018 to 2023 where probably gone from 5% of the company kind of understanding, being confident in what we're trying to achieve, what other processes are out there, why we need 3D, why we need other BIM processes. So now we're probably talking about 85%. That's probably been maybe a bit optimistic, but I dare say, because I've banged on about it enough, everyone now knows that we predominantly use 3D tools for pretty much everything. So in that aspect of 3D, the battle is kind of it's being won through education and just making sure people understand. Again, it's back to that word context. It's not to say that 3D supersedes 2D in everything. There's still a need for everything, like there's a need for every tool. There's not one software that fits everything. So everything is a case-by-case basis. You know, what is the project? What does the client want? What tools have we got? What have we got that we might want to bring in? Maybe this project has the need for drone surveys, say, but it's not something we've touched on yet. So, you know, it's having that wide range of vision. And it's not just, right, we've only ever done 2D, so we're just going to offer 2D. Don't be afraid to put the investment in, get the staff trained up, because the market's going that way. The industry is. Everything's going towards the 3D digital world. So the kind of battle in that was fairly easy compared to other ones. Other battles were kind of hardware issues, where obviously these days you need I'm predominantly handling large data sets of point cloud data, doing renders in Lumion, et cetera, need, you know, high powered laptop. So we've now talking like 64 gig is standard RAM, decent GPU, decent processor, and it's like a custom-built setup. So then getting in touch with IT in the early days saying, oh, I need one of these. Why? You're playing Call of Duty constantly, are you? It's like, well, no, because the softwares now have got gaming engines. And I think it probably took, well, I don't say probably, I know exactly because it's still in my mind etched in, 17 weeks of to and fro and discussions with IT around why we need this new hardware, which now it's kind of second nature as, oh, Ted, you've got a new starter. Do they need this custom build? Or da, 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 da. So again, time, education, we'd all like things to happen overnight. I'm well versed now that as long as change is happening, it's not quick, but it's trying to hold that optimism of, I think optimism is the word, or not getting kind of too negative about digital transformation, digital industry moves fast. Are we implementing our change throughout the company, whether it be hardware, software, visions? Our change may be slow, but is it too slow to catch on with where the rest of the industry is kind of going?
So Ted, you've talked about a lot of change that you've driven. You've talked about a kind of a really interesting way of how you've sort of proven the value of technology. Sounds like you've achieved a lot from going like sort of 5% awareness to sort of the 85% awareness. So what impact has that had on the way you work as a, you know, as a bunch of human beings? What visible impacts have you seen?
It's a very strange one, looking at the kind of landscape of, as I sit in the Truro office today, look back to when I joined in 2017, it was packed full. We had upstairs was a full team of multidiscipline kind of engineering from civil structures, highways, job lot. To now that we've got how many UK offices, maybe 5 or 6, 7 spread out up to Newcastle, Teesside, Hull, Bristol, Stoke, Wokingham. So we've kind of spread out across the UK. So kind of obviously with the advent of working from home through COVID, we've retained that flexible kind of working, which in this day and age is great. But yeah, that kind of engineering team is now, it doesn't have to be in one location due to digital connections and the way that we can work in softwares. Again, I'll mention Autodesk software because that's what we predominantly use, but BIM 360 to then, you know, be able to work share live on various 3D models from separate locations. We don't need that kind of old, I always call it the old school from what I was brought up with as a trainee, which was kind of a trainee stuck with maybe a graduate, a senior technician and a senior engineer in a group of four to kind of have that mentorship and you know, be the trainee. You do the kind of admin tasks and all the bits and bobs that you don't want your highly paid people to be doing. Whereas the current format is things have changed. You don't get, I don't tend to see anymore, you kind of old school 2D drafters. Everyone's now calling themselves a 3D design engineer or a BIM modeler, which is quite dangerous because I've come across quite a few people in my time. You know, I think my current job title could be quite dangerous. Head of digital design. What does it mean? I don't know. Still trying to figure it out. Where do you get people just plaster themselves as, you know, 3D design engineer? It's like, okay, well, what element of design or what element of 3D? A lot of people are just saying, well, I've used Revit for a bit or I've done some solid extrusions in whatever it is. I'll call myself this. Yeah. I can bump my pay grade higher and da, 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 da. So it's more of a minefield now because the industry's changed in terminology for people. You know, document controllers now are in the BIM world a project information controller, so it's not just the element of managing documents. You're now getting involved in just information for the project as a whole, which can be 3D information, it can be admin side of things. So I think every kind of position, if you want to call it, every team member's kind of definition is now changed. A lot of elements are still there, but you don't have the sole, or we're moving away definitely from, I've got a team of 10 guys, I've got 3 that just do pipe supports in 2D. I've got 3 that just do civil concrete slabs. Da, da, da. Now it's more of a multidisciplined approach, as I find. I think through my experience of joining the company as a senior engineering technician in 2017, to then go through CAD management, something else, and now arrive at that kind of the head of digital design, which I suppose is more, I try and stay away from the design these days. It's more of the kind of R&D, the testing, the architecture, the landscape and the roadmaps of where we're kind of going. But yeah, I've always been someone who's been jack of all trades, kind of master of none as such. Even in my early days as a trainee, it was kind of a shared resource between whatever discipline needed help at the time. So I gained a lot of valuable experience through geotechnics, highways, transport, civils, etc., but never kind of went, I want to be just doing structures and I'll get chartered as a structural engineer and da, da, da. No, for me, it was like, oh, I like this and I like that. And how can I bring elements of what I know about that into this? That kind of melting pot of things. So I'm looking at kind of recruitment now as, and it's very difficult to recruit people these days because everyone is wanting more money. Everyone can get more money. It's very difficult to get the skilled people, but I'm wanting multi-skilled people that can do. It's almost that Venn diagram with your circles of a bit of this, a bit of that, a bit of this. But if you bring one main skill in, fantastic. If we're missing that main skill, then people can latch onto that and cross their circles in that area. So it's building up people that can do a lot of different elements. So again, come across a lot of people that claim to know 3D, and it is, you open up the question a bit, like maybe something like this podcast will form the new interview strategy. Let's have a discussion about what you know and your visions and experiences, because that counts for a lot. Just being able to use a 3D tool doesn't mean you understand 3D.
Yeah, I think we're sort of like in a, we're sort of almost going back to the sort of like, do you understand the use of technology in context?
Everything needs a use. It's why do you choose anything in your daily life?
The why question, yeah.
Why am I holding a blue pen at the minute? Not because the use of this requires it has to be a blue pen. There's no point in getting a black one or a fancy this and that.
So Ted, a couple of questions to kind of bring us home. If you had to start this whole process again, if you went back 6 years, is there anything you would do differently in the way you rolled out digital technologies at Nyhouse? And what would it be and why?
I don't know. I always try not to try and think of doing things differently in a sense of we've got to where we are for a reason. Not that I'm a spiritual person or that kind of stuff. It's kind of, what would I do differently? I would probably be a bit more stubborn in the way that I am now. In the first instance, I'd have probably asked less questions and less approval as such. And maybe that old phrase of ask for forgiveness, not approval, which is maybe steam in and just say, I'm going to be risky and just do this.
Do it, yeah.
Implement it. Yeah. Get it done. Which I suppose in an element of where we're at, there's been quite a little bit of that, which luckily has been successful. So I'm still in a job. I think you've got to be kind of, you've got to kind of take those kind of risks to get that reward and payoff. Sometimes it might not work, but so long as it's not too risky to the business that actually by getting a bit of a pilot project, even getting a client on board who shares the same interests and thinks, actually, this could be good. We'll give you some funding and for this project, let's test out X, whatever it may be. You know, the biggest game changer, and I suppose if I could do things differently, it would be that kind of get myself up to speed.
Okay.
On the industry of everything that's involved in the digital construction and engineering, which now I'm still learning every day. Like I say, I've been in the business since 99, but to actually start embracing the 3D and all the digital tools now, it's only been the kind of past six years.
Okay.
As such. But yeah, we're now 18 months into purchasing our own in-house Navis VLX scanner. So that was a massive shift change again from first introducing the need for 3D scans. I think I did a bit of a kind of not KPI, but a bit of a review recently. So it was kind of since we started out, we're probably doing on average 6 3D scans of sites a year. Was the client interested in what we were doing? No. Was it deliverable? No. It was mainly to bring, the site back to the office.
Right.
Not doing much of the data. All Faro TLS scanners on hire, so you're talking 8 hours for a site. And then through lots of contacts and testing of various bits of kit that were on the market, I kind of went, this Navis one, for what we need it for, it's got that element of speed. We don't need the highly, highly accurate. Again, it's without name dropping products and whatnot, every scanner, every drone, whatever it has, it's use.
Right.
Predominantly our sites are kind of, we need it for as-built verification, we need it for pre-sales, come and visit the client. Oh, I've got an area over there that's this, this, and this. Can you fit your kit in? Right, we'll scan that, drop our 3D models in. Yes, now we can refine that. So yeah, maybe 6 a year. So within the first 12 months of getting our own in-house, we're up to 76 in the first year.
Wow.
And again, the uses of those from day one, we're all mainly kind of geospatial or just bringing the site back. So now we've probably got 8 use cases from volumetric analysis through to digital. Again, digital twin is a term that we could spend another 6 hours trying to define what that is. But
exactly.
Again, utilizing the software and the scanning hardware we've got, we can produce a digital twin of a site and kind of build up a kind of digital O&M manual, linking live data into sensors and tanks from there. So I look at certain things in the company. If we just talk about the 3D world or the software change or the culture change, that purchasing that scanner, huge. massive. Now we're able to go out and do jobs and get data and look at how we can, you know, I can spend a lot of time gathering data and analysing it versus other bits of data on the same site using different kit. And actually, that person on LinkedIn has produced XYZ. How can we do that with the software we've got? Or do we need to look at another bit of software that may enhance that? So I think going back to one of the first questions, now that we've been kind of acquired under the SOAR blanket, or I think something like the third largest water service management company in the world, as soon as kind of the takeover went through, I was getting Teams invites from their kind of digital innovations director and their digital team. It's like, oh, we've seen what you've done. You produced something to show and tell at IFA in Munich last year. It's like, yeah. It's like, that's what I'm trying to work on and get through the company, this digital twin aspect of all of our sites. And they're like, wow, this is massive. So I'm getting all that interest from the higher HQ. Went out to one of their sites in France last year, did a demo for them out there. And those guys coming in, I think that's, again, probably back to the first question, which was with the change and what are the hurdles with all these acquisitions and all the different melting pots of the things, is the fact that the group leaders have come straight in and gone, wow, you're the only person in the entire Nyhouse or global group that's actually got one of these things in-house. And I'm almost being treated as the guru expert in that field. Within this arena of our company, I kind of am.
What advice would you give to someone else who's thinking, oh my God, maybe they've inherited or they've walked into a situation where you were 6 years ago and you've met someone at a conference, they're going, oh, Ted, I'm really stuck. What advice would you give that person? What should they do? How should they start?
Just do it. As simple as that, really. Again, if you've got a vision, you just need to make sure in your own mind it has got a business case. That's the first thing. There's absolutely no point going in. As much as you might have this fairy tale thing, and you might have a Hollywood movie where the underdog comes an idea and it's like someone got wind of it and made millions and et cetera. It's like in this day and age, 1% of those ideas may get through if you don't have a proper business case for it. But R&D, test out that solution, get in touch with the software engineers or hardware engineers of said product, early involvement with the guys, get a test project going, whether it's through a company like, you know, let's say we predominantly use Autodesk products for a lot of things, so we've got some good relationships there. But again, other softwares that we use, again, with our scanning company Navis, customer success managers are there to help you through the thing. So I'd suggest get it down, get it working in your mind, get a little test project going on the side. And as soon as you think you've got something you can present to the company, you need that business case, and almost that show and tell. There's no point. I found a lot of talking. Oh, this software can do this and can do that and can do this. Okay, how? Show me. I've got a trial, but I've not populated anything yet. So if we can get a project, you need almost that prototype there ready to say, look, invest this. I'll give you a bit of blurb, but this is the end product. The key decision makers and the people with the checks only want to see that end product and what the beginning is. What's the investment? Right. What do we get out? The middle bit, you can make anything up because they're not really listening to the tech side of it. They just want to know what's in, what's out. Great. Can we make a profit? Does it benefit this? So I think that's my advice, if I could ever give advice. Just get on with it. The less thinking about it, obviously, I've alluded to this, I think I've said the same thing before in this podcast already, is the plethora of different softwares out there or different solutions. And it is main advice, what is the use case? Can it be used by your industry, by your clients, by your company? Even simple things. It's early communication and involvement and education with anyone, whether it's a stakeholder, whether it's your peers, whether it's anyone you may have a collaboration group in the company or something like that. Don't be afraid to speak up, claim your idea and push it. But yeah, it's that use case. What will that data be used for? Because we've got it on projects at the minute where you're still asking the client, okay, so you want this as deliverable, but for us to produce this in a 3D environment to the best of our capabilities, what are you going to use it for at the end when we hand it over? If it's just to be archived on a server somewhere to never be looked at, then we'll adopt our strategy. We won't go kind of all singing, all dancing, full organs blazing. It's kind of, that's the main things, communication, use case.
Ted, it's been absolutely fantastic to have this conversation with you. And now I've got the task of trying to summarize what I think I've heard you say today. So you can like mark me out of 10 on this if you want or whatever. So here we go. We started off talking about 3D, and then very early on, what I heard you say, actually, you made me think, 3D isn't just about three-dimensional design tools like CAD. It's actually a bigger concept. It's this concept of providing context to complicated projects, to a wide stakeholder group, some of who are extremely knowledgeable in engineering, some who probably aren't, but you kind of almost want to give them the context so they can apply their expertise to a project. I think that's kind of like the first thing that I learned. And the benefits of working in that way seem to be, yeah, of course, speed and accuracy. You talked about less errors. But then we sort of talked about it could ultimately change the way you function and work as a business. And you talked about sort of moving from specialists in a specific area to multi-discipline teams, which are far more agile and sort of capable of coming together to solve, you know, whatever the next problem is. So it sounds like there's some very strong benefits in there. In terms of how you go about it, I heard very strongly from you, like, really, let's just go back to it. Just do it. Find a pain, collect the data, prove the value in the use case, and build from there. But collaborate with all the stakeholders you possibly can to kind of just get on with it and do it. And one of the other things that I think you seem to be doing a lot is you've got that broader perspective in the organization. You're not necessarily sold on like drafting or design or 3D printing or scanning. You seem to be the person in the organization that's stepping back and have got that broader perspective, and you've got that broader mindset, and there's always somebody in the business that's just like prodding. Why are we doing it this way? Have you seen this? We could use this. So I think that's what I've learned from our conversation today. Would you think that sort of accurately sums up our chat today?
That's spot on, to be honest. It is. Taking a step back and trying to get away from the day-to-day job of you know, got brought up as a youngster drafting. I still absolutely love AutoCAD 3D modeling, solid modeling. This left hand, it just uses the keyboard. You know, people these days, the graduates come in, oh, what's this ribbon for? No idea. Don't know what the ribbons are. I'm old school. I learnt on release 12. Everything's keyboard inputs. But I absolutely love that element of 3D modeling in it. I know it's long and cumbersome, and it's not right for what we're doing these days, but I'll still fall back on it just for some kind of little sketches and things like that. So, again, the future of what we're doing, not just here, but you know, you probably have other guests talking about the same kind of transformations in industry and whatnot. It is, everything's got a purpose. Every tool, every software's got a purpose.
Yeah.
And it's not to mean that 3D is the answer to everything. There's still room for 2D. There's room for 4D, 5D, everything. It's all there. It's just there's no one D fits everything kind of thing.
So what we should do is add to that list is kind of like always start with the why and then choose the right tool for the right job. Yeah. Maybe that's a nice way to round that off. So, okay. Final question is we like to ask all our guests if they're kind of reading any books they find particularly insightful at the moment that they might recommend to other people on business and industry, or is there a podcast, or maybe with you, where do you go to get your inspiration? You mentioned LinkedIn, but would you say that's it? Is that the thing that you do to get your inspiration?
That's the only kind of newsy, social media-y kind of outlet that I actually use. I don't go in anything else. I suppose LinkedIn's always a good start to see what's out there, and things might flash up and it's like, oh, what's that small company that I've never heard of doing there?
You know, yeah.
It's all right seeing what the big kind of ACONs and what you aspire to be, but we're nowhere near that size. But what we're kind of delivering is along the lines, but we're such a smaller team. So, yeah, kind of don't really get – I have too much time to do anything other than family life and the day job. But, yeah, where we've got to has been through contacts in the industry, knowing various people that worked, whether it was in sales, going through digital software brands or hardware brands, and then just keeping in touch and saying, you know, what have you got on offer? What's the latest news? I'd love to be able to go to all the conferences, GeoWeeks and AU universities and all that. But, again, time, money, all that kind of stuff. So, it's collaboration with people, just keep in touch. Things like this are great where you openly discuss what you do, because you can spend so much time just sat in your job, and it's not until you kind of summarised just then. I'm like, oh, actually, you almost need someone else to listen to what you do, and they formulate, this is actually what you are trying to do. I'm like, oh, yeah, so it is. because you lose focus sometimes.
So Ted, it's been an absolute pleasure to have this conversation with you. I say this to all the guests. I'd love to come down and visit one day. So I'll let you know when I'm passing the sort of Truro area, and maybe I could pop in and have a look. So for those of you that are listening, again, there's been such a rich level of detail and content in today's episode. I'm hoping there's something that Ted has said that's kind of like made you think differently, inspired you to try something, or maybe overcome a challenge or a pain that you're facing. So huge thanks to you, Ted. A pleasure to have you on the show.
No, thank you.
Okay, and we will see you, the rest of you, on the next episode. So thanks very much for listening.